की जाए, श्री वृंदावन धाम की जाए, नवद्वीप धाम की जाए, गंगा जमुना तुलसी भक्ति देवी की जाए, आनंद गौरी वैष्णव वृंद की जाए, समवेत भक्त वृंद की जाए, गौ प्रेमानंदी All glories to some of the bodies, all glories to some of the bodies, all glories to some of the bodies, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guru Rangam, glories to Sri Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasadaya Buddhadeh Shivati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvata Deva Gauravani Prasadane Naravishesha Shunyavadi Pashtate Desha Tadane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasti Gaur Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Reading from Canto 10 of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 16, verse 45. Nama Krishnaya, Brahmaya, Vasudeva, Sutaya, Cha, Pradumnaya, Aniruddhaya Satvatam Pataye Namaha Namakrishnaya Ramaya Vasudeva Sutaya Cha Pradumnaya Aniruddhaya Satvatam Pataye Namaha Namakrishnaya Ramaya Vasudeva Sutaya Cha Pradumnaya Niruddhaya Satvatam Pataye Namaha Namaha. Namaha. Obeisances. Krishnaya. To Lord Krishna. Ramaya. To Lord Rama. Vasudeva Sutaya. The son of Vasudev. Cha. And. Pradyumnaya. To Lord Pradyumna. Aniruddhaya. To Lord Aniruddha. Satvatam of the devotees. Pataye. To the Lord. Namaha. Obeisances. Translation: we offer our obeisances to Lord Krishna and Lord Rama, the sons of Vasudev, and to Lord Pradyumna and Lord Aniruddha. We offer our respectful obeisances unto the master of all the saintly devotees of Vishnu. Text 46. Obeisances to you, O Lord, who manifest varieties of material and spiritual qualities. You disguise yourself with the material qualities, and yet the functioning of those same material qualities ultimately reveals your existence. You stand apart from the material qualities as a witness and can be known fully only by your devotees. Purport: the word guna conveys various meanings. The three basic qualities of material nature, that is goodness, passion, and ignorance, excellent qualities one manifests because of piety and spiritual achievement, or the internal senses such as the mind and intelligence. The word pratipaya means unto him who manifests or illuminates. Thus here the Nagapatnis are addressing the Supreme Lord as he who manifests all material and spiritual qualities and who causes the living energies to be conscious. One can see the Lord by going beyond the screen of material nature, and therefore he is called Gunatma Chadanaya. If one methodically and intelligently studies the functioning of the material qualities, he will ultimately conclude that there is a Supreme Personality of God and that he exhibits his illusory potency to bewilder those who do not surrender unto him. The Lord is never affected by the modes of nature, being their witness, and thus he is called Gunadrastre. The word sva indicates one's own, and thus sva sambide means that Lord Krishna can be known only by his own people, the devotees, and also that ultimately only the Lord can know himself perfectly. Therefore, we should take Lord Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita and immediately come to the right conclusion, full surrender to the Lord's lotus feet. Thus, we should humbly glorify the Lord, following the example of the Nagapatnis. Text 47, O Lord Hrishikesh, Master of the senses, please let us offer our obeisances unto you, whose pastimes are inconceivably glorious. Your existence can be inferred from the necessity for a creator and revealer of all cosmic manifestations. But although your devotees can understand you in this way, to the non-devotees you remain silent, absorbed in self-satisfaction. Translation: we offer our obeisances to Lord Krishna and Lord Rama, the sons of Vasudev, and to Lord Pradyumna and Lord Aniruddha. We offer our respectful obeisances unto the master of all the saintly devotees of Vishnu. Obeisances to you, O Lord, who manifests varieties of material and spiritual qualities. You disguise yourself with the material qualities, and yet the functioning of those same material qualities ultimately reveals your existence. You stand apart from material qualities as a witness and can be fully known only by your devotees. So, this verse 45 is describing the Lord and his expansions, who are non-different from himself. And this is difficult for some people to understand, because if we say God, there's only one God, and God has many forms, and if we say there's many gods, because if we say there's Krishna and Rama and Narasimha and Hayagriva, etc. So this isn't one God, this is many gods. And of course, people who look at the Vedas, they say, oh, the Vedas are full of worship of many gods, not one God. So there's a lot of misconceptions about the Supreme Lord. So though we say there is one God, that one God can also have unlimited forms. Nevertheless, people worship other forms also who are not that Supreme God. And we can call them devatas and whatnot. And of course, there's other lesser entities also. And of course, those are also described in the Vedic literature, the devatas. So there's two sets of many gods. One is the devatas, who are actually not God, and the other is the Supreme Lord with all of his multifarious forms. But it's not many gods in that case, it's still one God. But that is difficult for people to understand. If God is one, how can he have two forms instead of one form? So we don't even say that. We say God can have infinite forms and be one at the same time. So this is a little bit different from our conceptions of things in this material world. One object has one form only. It cannot have two forms, then it's two objects. But God is different. He can be one and he can have many forms. So that requires a little bit of a different understanding. So because God has infinite powers, he can manifest infinite number of forms and still be one. That is his power, special power. So here we have a list of some of the expansions of the Supreme Lord. We have Krishna, we have Balaram, we have Pradyumna and Aniruddha. So technically we have Vasudev, Shankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. This is called the Chaturvyuha, or the one of the expansions of the Lord in four forms. And if we look in the Chaitanya Charitamrita there, Lord Chaitanya describes how from these forms we get an expansion of forms. So we end up with 24 Vishnu forms ultimately arising out of Krishna. And besides that, of course, we get all the avatar forms of the Lord who appear in the material world, such as Rama and Narsimha and Hayagriva and Varaha, Vamana, etc. And Lord Chaitanya also describes that the number of incarnations of the Lord is like the waves in the ocean. That is unlimited, because we can sit on the shore of the ocean and count the waves, and we can sit there for our whole lifetime counting waves coming in, and more waves will keep coming in. So it's infinite number of waves in the ocean. They keep appearing. So similarly, the incarnations of the Lord keep appearing in this material world, yuga after yuga after yuga, day after day of Brahma, and Brahma after Brahma. The avatars keep appearing. And they are one Lord, but they're all different in form. So Lord has infinite number of forms, but yet he is still one. So this is part of the inconceivable nature of the Supreme Lord. He has great powers to do this. But we should distinguish this, this aspect of the Lord, that the avatars are non-different from the Lord, from devatas, who are different from the Lord. So what is the difference? The difference actually is the difference between, we can say, the difference between God and Jiva. The devatas are generally Jiva. And the avatar forms are Supreme Lord himself. So their essence is God. And the essence of the devatas is Jiva. And they have a particular body. And in this body they serve the Lord. So the avatar forms are, and the all the multifarious forms of the Lord, they are non-different from their bodies. Their self is non-different from their body. We cannot say that with the devatas. Devatas have a birth and death. So their body is different from their self. And they are like us. We also have bodies, and our body is different from the self. So there's a difference there. So therefore the devas are jiva-tattva, not Vishnu-tattva. So that is the big difference. And what this means is that the powers are not the same. The powers of God and the powers of Jiva are different. So all of these multifarious forms like Rama and Narasimha, and Krishna and Balaram, etc., they have all powers. And the Jivas don't. So there's a limitation on these two definitions. Jiva has some powers, but not all powers. And the Supreme Lord has all powers and all qualities. However, if we investigate a little or think about it a little bit, then we'll say, well, look, we have not Rama and Narasimha and Krishna. And do they have the same powers or not? And the same qualities? And we see qualities? No. Because if we look at Narasimha, he has certain qualities. What are his qualities? He's ferocious, like a lion. And he's very angry at Hiranyakasipu. And he doesn't display the same qualities as Krishna in Vrindavan, who's a little innocent boy. And he sits on the lap of his mother and he cries. It's not the same, but not the same qualities, obviously. And different qualities. He has different form, different qualities, and different activities. How can they be the same? Completely different. And the powers are different. Everything is different. If they manifest different qualities and they manifest different sentiments, and the devotees are different also. Same with Vishnu. Vishnu's qualities are different. And Mahavishnu quality are different again. Creating material universes. Krishna doesn't do any of that. So they look very, very different also. Even we say they're all God. So they have different qualities and different powers. How can they all be one equal God? How can they all be the same? The answer to that is, yes, they're all God, but and they all have the powers, but they do not manifest the powers. They do not show the powers in the same way. So in that sense, they are different. Because they have the powers, they are one. And because they don't manifest, they are different. Now, in spite of that, still, Bhagavatam says, Krishna astu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is distinguished from everybody else. Krishna is better. But we should have no inequality in God. If everything is, all these forms are God, we cannot say one type of God is better than another type of God. That means automatically means difference again and inferior superiority. And God should be supreme. And yet we say Krishna is supreme. And Vishnu is secondary or whatever like that we say. So that also looks a little confusing, how we can point out one form of God as superior to another. So in a sense, no, we cannot say that. Just as we cannot say that the gopis are better than Arjuna or better than Hanuman or whatever. We cannot say that in one sense. But yeah, nevertheless, Lord Chaitanya says that. He says the gopis are the supreme devotees. Even though the devotees are all wonderful and all perfect in all service of the Lord. In one sense, he says they are superior. But when Lord Chaitanya says that, he says that in a certain way also. He has a certain meaning there. So in the same way as we say Krishna is supreme, it also has a certain meaning. It doesn't mean that everybody else is powerless or inferior or whatnot. But the sense is that Krishna manifests all powers completely in the most wonderful way. In that sense, he is supreme. Even though all the other forms of God also have the powers, they don't manifest them. So because Krishna manifests everything in the most wonderful way, he is the most attractive. And therefore, he's supreme. Because he has all the qualities manifested fully in his pastimes, therefore, he's most attractive to all people because he has all qualities. If you want power, you can see power in Krishna. If you want intimacy and sweetness, you see that in Krishna. If you want to see the merciful aspect of the Lord, you will see that in Krishna to the maximum also. So everything is, all the wonderful qualities of the Supreme Lord are manifested fully in Krishna. And therefore we say he's supreme. Because the manifestation is supreme. So in other forms, there are qualities, some of the qualities are manifest and some are not manifest. And this creates the variety in the different forms, like Varaha, Narasimha, and Rama, etc. So they'll manifest some of the qualities, but not all the qualities. So that is the actual distinction. So Krishna we call supreme, even though technically or philosophically Vishnu and Krishna are the same. They are different because Krishna manifests all the qualities in the most remarkable way. He has extra things that he manifests that others don't. And even the qualities that the others manifest, he manifests in a more wonderful way. So that is the distinction. For instance, here, the Nagapatnis are praising Krishna because he is the source of everything. He is the witness of everything. He's the source of everything. He's the cause of everything. He's the creator. I said in the last verse, Kartra, he is the doer. He is the creator of everything. But we can say, no, Mahavishnu is the creator, not Krishna. Because we don't see Krishna in Goloka creating universes and things like that. And in Raja, he does not create universes and do all this. And the material world we know from the Bhagavatam also is a manifestation from Mahavishnu, not from Krishna. So in that sense, we can say Vishnu is superior because he manifests creation and Krishna doesn't. So in that sense, how we can say that Krishna is superior? We can say, well, Krishna has his four sweet qualities, you know, the flute and the sweet form and the devotees and sweet leelas, so he's in that way superior. But then Vishnu can manifest more powers because he manifests all the universes within his body and all the avatar forms emanate from Vishnu. These are the qualities of Vishnu. And Krishna doesn't do that. So then in that sense, in power form, Vishnu is supreme. So we cannot say Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. Right? The answer to that is that it may look like that, because Vishnu is actually, Mahavishnu is the manifester of the material world. That's his functional aspect. But of course, we also understand that Mahavishnu's origin he has also, in a sense, an origin in the spiritual world in Vaikuntha. He is an expansion from the Vaikuntha form of Sankarshan. And we also know, of course, that Sankarshan is an expansion of Balaram. And Balaram himself admits that he is inferior to Krishna in one sense. He is also subject to Krishna's Maya. So in the Brahma Mohana Lila, their example is given that when Krishna expanded himself into all the forms of the cowherd boys and the calves, when Brahma apparently put them all into the cave and put them all to sleep for a year. Balaram was not there that day. He didn't go out because of his mother kept him home for some ceremony. So he was not involved in any of this. So he was going out after that. Every day he would go out with Krishna and all the cowherd boys and the calves who were actually Krishna. And he also didn't notice anything. For 1 year. And 1 year they were going out together, playing in the fields, etc. And he was thinking, these are the cowherd boys and these are the calves, etc. And then about 5 days before 1 year was up, suddenly he had some little realization. And that was when he was looking at the cows on Govardhan Hill with the cowherd men. And the cowherd boys were at the bottom of the hill with the calves, the older calves from the last year, which were actually Krishna. And then the cows saw those calves, and they came running down the hill really quickly over all the rocks and the branches and everything, and the cowherd men were yelling at them and cursing them and trying to stop them from coming down the hill, and they couldn't stop them. And they were running down the hill after the cows and trying to bring them back. But the cows kept running and running and running down the hill until they got to the calves. And when they saw the calves, and they started licking the calves and giving them milk. And the cowherd men came up running behind them, and they were cursing the cows. And then when they saw their sons, they immediately forgot about the cows, and they embraced their sons, and they began crying. And the Balaram saw that, and he said, "This is very peculiar. Why do the cows run after these particular calves when they actually have new calves this year? They've already born new calves, and they don't feed those calves at all. They feed the old calves, and they're so attracted to the old calves. And why are these parents attracted to their sons so much now? They're so absorbed in their sons suddenly." And then he remembered that this has been going on for a whole year. Now this is very peculiar. He says, "There's something strange. Maybe the demons have disguised themselves as the cows and the calves and the cowherd boys or something. There's something. Maybe they're causing some illusion, or maybe they're impersonating." And he said, "No, demons cannot fool me. I will know if there's a demon here. I can see that." Then he thought, maybe the devas are doing something. And then he thought, well, devas shouldn't come down here. They have no business with us. We're just cowherd people. And thought, maybe the rishis are doing something. The rishis also are not going to interfere with the cowherd people. They have no business here. He thought again. "No one can bewilder me except Krishna. So this must be Krishna's maya. Krishna's doing something." And then he concentrated and he looked very carefully, and he looked at the calves and he looked at the cowherd boys, and he saw, it's Krishna. Everything is Krishna. So in this way, that incident illustrates that even Balaram is under Krishna's yoga maya. He gets befooled by Krishna's yoga maya, and he is lesser than him. So that's one way in which Krishna showed his power even over Balaram, who expands into Shankarshan, who expands into Mahavishnu, who creates the material worlds. So though we can say that Krishna doesn't directly create, at the same time, he is the creator of the creators, and he is the manifester of all the manifestors in that way. And as well, when Brahma came back right after that, and then Brahma was also confused because he also saw. He went to the cave to see the cowherd boy sleeping there with the calves. And yes, they were sleeping there. And then he looked out in the fields, and there the cowherd boys, same cowherd boys, were there with the same calves playing with Krishna. And then he thought, what is this? How can they be in both places? So which ones are the real cowherd boys? The ones in the cave sleeping, or the one, did Krishna manifest some more imitation cowherd boys? Or are the cowherd boys that are in the cave, are they not the real ones? And the real ones outside playing still? And he couldn't figure out. Are they both illusory? Are the real cowherd boys somewhere else? And he could not understand at all. And actually that was the case. Neither of those were the cowherd boys. Yeah? Now the ones that were playing outside were actually Krishna, and the ones in the cave couldn't be the cowherd boys, because the cowherd boys and the calves are all spiritual, and Brahma cannot touch anything spiritual. They are superior to Lord Brahma, so he cannot put them in the cave and put them all to sleep. It's not possible. He is less. So who's in the cave then? So this was a manifestation of Maya of Krishna again. These are Maya cowherd boys and calves in the cave, not the real ones. So where do the real ones go? They're part of Krishna's uppercut Leela at that point. In the spiritual world, not in the material world. He took them in the spiritual world, back in the spiritual world. So in other words, there were three sets of cowherd boys there. The ones in the spiritual world, the real ones, the ones, the Maya ones sitting in the cave for Lord Brahma, and the ones which were Krishna playing in the field. So Brahma was very confused by this whole issue. He couldn't understand. It was astonishing to him. And then, at that moment, then Krishna revealed, lifted the veil in one sense, or in another sense, we could say it's yoga maya of Krishna.
when Lord Brahma looked at the very carefully at all the cowherd boys and the calves, then suddenly saw they were all Vishnus. And all these Vishnus were like the universal form, containing all the material elements, etc., and all the devatas, and all the planetary systems, and all the animals, and all the plants, and all the rivers, and the mountains, and everything. Everybody was worshipping these Vishnu forms. Vishnu forms are supreme. And Brahma was astonished. He's never seen so many Vishnus in his life. Brahma only sees one Vishnu. He can only see that Vishnu who is his source, that is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And here he was seeing maybe, I don't know how many, millions and millions of Vishnu forms suddenly. And what were these Vishnu forms? They were the manifestors of the material worlds, all the universes. And he also understood that all these Vishnu forms were manifested from Krishna. So though Krishna does not directly manifest all the material worlds, he is the manifester of all the Vishnu forms to create all the material worlds. So he is superior. He's a superior creator. If we say Mahavishnu is great because he manifests the material worlds, then Krishna is greater because he manifests all the Vishnus who manifest all the material worlds. So in this way, Krishna shows his superiority as the creator also. So he has more power, since he manifests more powers. So that is one way in which Krishna manifests powers. Now, of course, as far as sweetness is concerned, all the other forms of God are deficient in that sense. They do not manifest sweetness like Krishna manifests. Which means sweetness means that the relationship is so intense and intimate that the devotees do not see the Supreme Lord as God. They see him in a particular relationship only of love, such as Vatsalya, Madhurya, Sakya, and Dasya. So the intensity is there of that love. So that is called sweetness. So that sweetness manifests fully only in Krishna. There are aspects of sweetness, of course, in other forms also. For instance, Rama has Vatsalya Rasa with Dasaratha and his mother. And other forms also manifest something. But not to the extent that Krishna manifests. So Krishna manifests all the rasas and all of them in a complete form. And other forms will manifest some of the rasas and in incomplete forms. And apart from that, of course, the complete form includes this idea of intensity and sweetness, which we do not see in the other forms. So even in Krishna's Dwarka form or Mathura form, the devotees see, they appreciate the sweetness of Krishna also, but it is different from that of Vrindavan because they see him as son of Vasudeva, and Vasudeva, when Vasudeva and Devaki were in the prison, then Krishna manifested this form with four arms, and then they understood, oh, this is Supreme Lord. So even Vasudeva and Devaki as parents, even though they have Vatsalya Rasa, it is mixed with Aishvarya. They see him as God. So therefore, the intensity of the relationship is less than that of Nanda and Yasoda. So in that sense, there's a difference between the forms of God, even the forms of Krishna. So the Dwaraka and Mathura form are considered less perfect than the Vrindavan form. And the forms of Krishna are still, even Dwarka forms, have more full manifestations of rasas than the Vishnu forms in Vaikuntha, or the avatar forms. So in terms of manifestation, therefore, Krishna has the most complete manifestation of everything. Powers, sweetness, mercy, whatever. All the wonderful qualities. Therefore, we say he is Swayam Bhagavan. Not that he creates, literally creates, because all the forms of the Lord are eternal. But just like we say the Lord is the creator of Prakriti or whatever, that's also eternal. So we cannot say it's created, but nevertheless, Krishna is superior by his manifestation of, full manifestation of powers, sweetness, etc. And therefore he's called Swayam Bhagavan. So all these forms may be there, but nevertheless we have to distinguish Krishna from all the other forms. And that is mentioned, of course, by Rupa Goswami, where he says, Akila Rasamrita Murti, the first words of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That's basically about bhakti, and the culmination of bhakti is prema. And prema is an ocean of bliss, bhakti rasa. But in this nectar of devotion, of course, all forms of God will have, can manifest prema and give mercy to devotees, and one can attain prema for Vishnu or Narasimha or Rama or anyone. But ultimately, Rupa Goswami's conclusion is that Krishna is Akila Rasamrita Murti. He is the very personification of all rasas, all 12 rasas, completely. And he manifests those more than any other. And therefore, Krishna is the source of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He is the ocean of rasa, not the others. Ultimately, Krishna is. And others are partial manifestations of that. So that's how we distinguish Krishna. So here the Nagapatnis are praising the Lord because he has all of these wonderful forms. And they're all God, and they're all absolute. Even though it's one God, he has many forms and many qualities manifested, etc. But ultimately, again, Krishna is the ultimate manifestation. And that is indicated by the meaning of Krishna. Of course, Krishna means all-attractive. All-attractive, having all wonderful qualities manifested fully. And therefore, in that sense, he is supreme. This verse 46, it talks about gunas. Krishna is a guna pradipa, a lamp of qualities, or one who manifests qualities like a lamp manifests light. So he is guna pradipa. Krishna is manifest qualities. So that we can take, of course, as manifesting spiritual qualities, obviously, when Krishna manifests all of his qualities in full. In nectar devotion there, 64 qualities mentioned. Of course, there are infinite qualities, but 64 are mentioned. So he is the source of wonderful qualities. And this is distinct from material quality. Material quality is a cause of bondage. Material quality is inferior, changing, cause of maya, cause of distress in the material world. So Krishna, when he manifests qualities, they're different. They're eternal. They're a cause of bliss. So when Krishna has qualities and the devotee sees those qualities or senses the qualities with any of his five senses, not just sight, we see with the eye, we smell with the nose, we hear with the flute, or Krishna's voice, or Krishna's ankle bells with our ear, or we happen to touch Krishna, if we're very fortunate, or his lotus feet, or whatever. So we have all of our senses involved in spiritual senses, in sensing or experiencing Krishna. So we sense Krishna through his qualities. So with our sight, we see the form of Krishna, and what are the qualities we see? We see the color of Krishna, and wonderful ornaments of Krishna, whatever. The peacock feather of Krishna. So all these things that we see, these aspects of Krishna, become impetuses for love and bliss. Everything that the devotee will see becomes an impetus for love of Krishna. And that's, of course, exemplified by Lord Chaitanya when he was in Puri, or even in Navadvip. Especially in Puri, it's described how he would simply see the cloud in the sky, and he saw that color of the cloud, and immediately, Krishna. And then he would start having ecstatic symptoms of Krishna. This color of Krishna. And the same, of course, of the devotees in the spiritual world, when they see anything They walk in the forest and they see something. It reminds them of Krishna. Or they see the cloud in the sky. They will think Krishna again, and they will start having ecstatic symptoms. Why? Because the qualities of Krishna are absolute, and they will invoke that ananda or bliss immediately. They will immediately think of Krishna. So Krishna and his qualities are very important. If we say Krishna is God, worship him. Okay, he's supreme. We can worship him, but that will not give rise to much of a much bhakti. Because we can say, okay, someone is supreme. Okay, that's even one quality in itself. But as I said, that's also a secondary quality, because God has his primary qualities and the secondary qualities. So greatness and infinity and power and transcendence, these are all aspects of greatness of God as a creator, etc. But those which invoke devotion and bliss and bhakti, the more personal qualities. So we see the details of the form of Krishna and his activities. This gives rise to greater bliss. So if we understand the detailed beauty of Krishna and his qualities and his activities, then we can develop more devotion. So the qualities are very, very important for us. And of course, not next verse also, the activities of Krishna. Qualities and activities are very important. So actually, many of the qualities will manifest through the activities of Krishna. And therefore, when Krishna appears, he is not simply standing there. He does lila. He does activities in relation to the devotees. And this way they appreciate all of his qualities. And this way they also see his form. So in this way, quality is, Krishna is the manifester of all wonderful qualities, guna pratipa. And they manifest themselves as a light manifests its own light, and it reveals itself. So Krishna reveals himself. He's not dependent on something else to reveal him. He is self-revealing. So he's described as having all qualities. And even the material qualities also ultimately depend upon the Lord. Because the Lord has qualities, there are qualities in the material world. The qualities of the material world are a reflection of his qualities. The rasas of the material world and the relationships and the types of bliss you can have in the material world are all reflections of the Krishna's relationships. So just as we have Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya, rasa, spiritual rasas, we'll find similar things in the material world. Which causes which? So it's the spiritual ones, they're the real ones, and the reflection is the material rasas. So similar with all the qualities, everything is inverted, everything is reflected. So all aspects of beauty we see in the material world are ultimately reflections of Supreme Lord's beauty. All wonderful sound, all music is a reflection of Krishna's flute. Everything is reflected from the spiritual world, all these qualities we have. So even the material qualities, whatever wonderful is in material nature, is an aspect of the Lord, as Krishna says in chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita. All the vibhutis are simply small particles of the glory of the Lord. And at that, everything in the material world, of course, is temporary, but everything in the spiritual world is eternal. So that way also Krishna is guna pradipa, even of the material qualities. He is the ultimate source of those also. So in this way, the Nagapatnis are praising Krishna. Okay. Question?
Can you tell me more about on that Srinathji is up there? It's in Nagdwara.
Generally from an avatar, we say that's a murti form, archa form. It's a deity form of Krishna. But the story is told in the Chaitanya Charitamrita how that was, that deity was found by Madhavendra Puri. He had a dream. He was walking around in Vrindavan area, and he had a dream. And then the dream said, Krishna says, I'm here. Pull me out. I'm hungry. And then he called the villagers, and they started digging through the, you know, the shrubs and everything, and they found the deity there. The deity had apparently been abandoned because the Muslims had come, and everyone would run away, and they hid the deity. And then nobody remembered after that. So then they found this deity form there. So then Madhavendra Puri began to worship the deity. And he called all the villagers, and they began preparing all sorts of, cooking all sorts of foods and everything, and they offered to the deity, and made a temporary temple there. And then from that point, it was worshipped on Govardhan Hill for some time. And when Lord Chaitanya came, he actually, the deity was there at that time. And when the Goswamis were there, it was there. The Muslims also were approaching, and then they took the deity off the hill and took it to Mathura. Lord Chaitanya would not go up Govardhan Hill. It was on top of Govardhan Hill, and Lord Chaitanya didn't want to step on Govardhan Hill, so he never saw the deity. And the Goswamis also, apparently. But when it came, they moved the deity to Mathura at one time. And then the Goswamis went there to see the deity. And Mathura when it came there. Anyway, then sometime afterwards, Vallabhacharya's group, Vallabhacharya was more as a contemporary of Lord Chaitanya. And his sons were worshipping the deity, I believe. And then I think again the Muslims were attacking, so they took the deity down to Nathdwara, the present location down there, which was a little safer because of the Rajputs.
Sometimes we see that word is used in Bhagavatam verse. So that word should be taken as a material quality because now this Gurupradi word is used for Krishna. But many times we translate Guru as material qualities.
Yeah.
So how do we understand sometimes Guru as spiritual quality?
We have to see the context of the words. Like Atma also has so many contexts. It can mean body, it can mean senses, it can mean mind, it can mean soul. I mean Krishna also. So we have to see the context of the statement. So this of course is a little problematic because we see like in Upanishads it says that God has no qualities. And even in Bhagavad it says Nirguna. God is Nirguna in some places. So God has no qualities. Well, what does that mean? God has no spiritual qualities or no material qualities? Or no inequality. So we have to take the meaning according to statements elsewhere in the Bhagavatam. Now, of course, obviously, the whole idea of Vyasadeva writing this work was that he was to glorify Krishna as the ultimate form of God. That was the whole idea. And to do that by describing his pastimes. So if God has no qualities, how you can describe pastimes at all? That would make the whole of the pastimes useless, because it's all illusory. So just on that basis, we have to say that guna, when it says nirguna in relation to the Lord, it cannot mean material quality. Or, you know, can only mean no material quality. It cannot mean no spiritual qualities. Because then there could be no lila of Krishna, and therefore the whole Bhagavatam would be useless. So we have to see things according to context.
Word sagun, is it describing the material qualities or?
What's that?
Saguna.
Saguna. Well, it can be. There's that this whole idea of saguna Brahman and nirguna Brahman. This is an idea that comes with Shankaracharya. That there's two Brahmans. Not one. First he says one Brahman, and then he says, well, actually, it has two forms. So he makes two Brahmans. The saguna and the nirguna forms. Now, of course, that can be contested. And sometimes, if you want to say one, say it as one, and don't say there's two aspects of it. Ultimately, when you talk about the saguna Brahman, if you look closely, it means that ultimately the saguna Brahman really isn't the Brahman. It is the Brahman covered by sattva-gun, material energy. And then from that comes the avatar forms of the Lord. So the avatar forms are Brahman covered by sattva-gun. So that's his idea. Huh? Other people don't accept that. Even other impersonalists may not accept that interpretation. Huh?
So in Bhagavatam, there is no such words as something.
They may use, but in a different context. Huh? Why? Well, that's just one way of analyzing that word. Of course, there's many different ways. And they'll quote different scriptures for that. So some will say it's Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. Some will say whatever, you know, like that. I think probably Jiva Goswami has analyzed it that way, according to some scripture. Why? You can ask the scripture, perhaps.
Like all the Krishna's avatars, they have different qualities, mm-hmm. and the devotees also. But like in terms of like demigods, like I'm born and brought up in India, we worship Lord Ganesha, Lord Shiva, but like they have different qualities, but we don't know the purpose to worship. But how is related with the qualities of like Lord Narasimha and Lord Shiva and Ganesha?
In the material world, of course, there's so many different qualities manifested and so many powers. Yeah? So the devatas have limited powers. In most cases, they all have temporary bodies and they have to give up their bodies. The benedictions they can give are material benedictions. In other words, none of the devatas can give you a position in the spiritual world. They cannot bestow that. Yeah? So there's a distinction of their... They have various powers, definitely. Yeah? So Ganesh frees you from obstacles or whatever. And other certain devatas will give you children. And certain devatas will free you from smallpox disease or whatever. You got all sorts of devatas for different things, different powers. Yeah? But it's all material. That main distinction is material benedictions and material powers and material qualities versus spiritual.
So, like Narasimha, Lord Narasimha, like Lord Varaha, they have all spiritual qualities.
They can bestow liberation on you. They can, by their mercy, you can go to the spiritual world. Get rid of birth and death. The devatas cannot do that.
How is related with the devotee's quality? Like you said, like devotees have also different qualities in the particular pastime. What is it?
Oh, well, the devotees have, well, because of the qualities of the particular form of the Lord, the devotees become attracted to those qualities. So Rama, Hanuman is attracted to Rama. He's not attracted to Krishna. He's not attracted to Hayagriva. He's not attracted to Varaha. He's attracted only to Rama. Huh? Why? Because of Rama's particular qualities as the ideal king, etc. And those particular qualities are for him, so similar. Other devotees may be attracted to that particular form. Some may be attracted to Vishnu. Or some may be attracted to Narasimhadeva for his particular qualities. And so they develop a particular relationship in relation to that particular form. So then the bhakti is a little different.
Is true that Lord Hanumanji is an expression of Lord Shiva and Parvati?
Maybe in the Puranas or something it says like that. We ultimately accept him as an eternal servant of the Lord. So then he doesn't come from anybody in one sense. He's eternally the servant of Rama. Rama's eternal. Huh? And so in terms of manifesting in the material world, he may be born in so many different ways, but ultimately he's an eternal associate of the Supreme Lord.
You're discussing the nature of Krishna. We see in Gaudiya temples other forms of the deities being worshipped, not so much from the title which I suppose, but you know, other forms such as Nishin Dev or Ahara or something like that,
mm-hmm.
being worshipped for a moment. What's the meaning of this other worship if you're worshipping the original?
Well, ultimately, We don't have to. It's not necessary. Of course, the other thing is, according to your particular mode, just like Murari Gupta was a devotee of Lord Chaitanya, but at the same time, he was worshipping Rama, a different form. Now, generally, as far as Sampradaya is concerned, we will say Radha Krishna, actually, is supreme. And that's Lord Chaitanya's thing. So technically, we should only have Radha Krishna there. But because we're following Lord Chaitanya, and it's only through Lord Chaitanya we get his mercy, therefore Lord Chaitanya should also be there. So that we have Radha Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. So that's kind of a basic skeleton of our worship. Now, according to individual likings or whatever, other things could be there also. But as far as Sampradaya, that's the main element. So then we can have other forms of the Lord, like Jagannath and whatever also. Lord Chaitanya was in Puri, so he was seeing Jagannath, etc. And of course, Lord Chaitanya worshipped Narasimha. When he went in the Jagannath temple every day, he would offer prayers to Lord Narasimha. So then he was worshipping there. So it could be added according to certain leelas of the Lord, or according to certain preferences of the devotees also, whatever. So that's why in Bombay, Prabhupada put Rama, because it was a popular form of the Lord in Bombay. So then you put Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman there also. Or in, Fiji? Kaliya Krishna is there, another form of the Lord. Kaliya Krishna is there with Kaliya. And are the wives there also? No. Nagampatnis are there. Though, ultimately, if one has too many forms, one can get very distracted by all these different forms. So it's better not to have too many forms, because then one can go off in many directions. And as far as Sampradaya, if we start advertising other forms, then people will think that maybe those are the supreme forms also. So we should, as far as Sampradaya and public worship, then the main deity should be the Radha Krishna ones.
Right. Krishna's eternal associates like Nanda and Shiva, are they considered jivas or are they?
In one sense, yes. In the Gaudiya Kantahara, they have another Shakti Tattva, more or less, also. Like Radha is considered Shakti Tattva. As for the others, we call them Nitya Siddhas, so then we just have to classify them as Jivas, because they're not Ishvara, they're not the Supreme Lord. So we don't have any other classifications that we have to put in the Jiva category, but we call them Nitya Siddha Jivas.
So they're part of larger energy, part of eternal spiritual energy?
Well, internal, external, well, they can say the marginal potency, but they're eternally with the Lord. So they're incorporated within the spiritual, the internal energy, we can say, even though they're, you know, jiva tattva by nature. Okay. Hare Krishna.